Happy, 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 happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, name goes here to you.
Happy birthday.
Have a happy, happy, happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you.
It's our birthday. Welcome to the 100th episode of Talk Central. I'm Duncan MacLeod.
And I'm Richard van der Berg.
This is Talk Central. Yep, you heard it. Episode 100 for the weekend starting Friday, 6 May 2014.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism. Look for us on Twitter at Tech Central.
On Google Plus at Plus Tech Central.
And on Facebook at Tech Central ZA.
And of course, I did mean Friday, 6 June, not 6 May. On Talk Central this week, we talk about the startling revelations from Vodafone about government's eavesdropping on its networks. We look at Apple's keynote this week, and we also chat about in-car internet radio in South Africa.
And as always, we pick up the week's biggest winner and biggest loser, and Duncan and I will pick our favorite product or app of the week.
That's right, but first we need to pay the bills. We'll be back right after this.
Okay, I'm in. Just watch out for security. Don't worry about him, but let's drop this joint.
Avoid the hassles and costs of on-site guarding and keep an eye on your business premises with Guardian Eye remote monitoring from Vox Telecom. We'll monitor your premises 24/7, utilizing your existing data link to keep costs down. You can remotely view and control access points from your smartphone or tablet. Guardian Eye from Vox Telecom, the visionary remote monitoring system for businesses. SMS your name to 31965 and we'll call you right back. Standard rates apply.
Okay, well, I'm not going to insist that we actually sing Happy Birthday, Rachat. I think it's too cold for that in Johannesburg today anyway.
Yeah, winter has certainly hit us.
But 100th episode, quite exciting. It's freezing out there. Let's get into the news. There's so much hot news this week to talk about. Keep us warm. Vodafone, I think that's the biggest news of the week, broke this morning. Rachat, you've been following the story. It sounds remarkable what they've disclosed. Basically, that governments and a whole bunch of operations that they own around the world, they own 29, including Vodacom in South Africa, that in many of these operations, governments have direct access into their networks and can eavesdrop on live conversations and do other stuff. What's exactly happening?
Well, since last year with Snowden's releasing a lot of the reports implicating the US and Britain surveillance, UK surveillance at least, Vodafone in a report, the Law Enforcement Disclosure Report, basically said that government agencies have wires directly into their network infrastructure, and obviously this is an attempt to break the silence from their part, and I think they should be commended for it. But it's incredibly scary and worrying to think that even though there are these legislations around the world and in South Africa preventing anybody accessing it, the fact that the infrastructure allows it means that there's more likely somebody that can tap into those networks and listen to voice conversations or even track people. We actually spoke to these operators in South Africa. They all have given us generic statements saying that they do follow the RICA Act. But what's worrying for me is the fact that, you know, the system is there, the system's in place, the wires are tapped into the networks.
Do we know that? Are the wires actually there? Or the systems are simply are required to be able to be tappable? I think that's what they're saying.
Tappable, yeah. Well, that's what the RICA Act says, or RICA says that network operators have to have provision for the agencies to be able to tap into it. But I mean, if you look at what networks are likely constructed of, there must be a software application or a server run into the backbone that somebody has to have access to, because they're not going to be installing this every time somebody requests it, right?
Yes.
It needs to be there all the time.
I think everyone, when RICA first came out, I think it was about 10 years ago now, everyone focused on the SIM card registration aspect of it. And it's just a pain in the backside for anyone who goes and buys a SIM card and you have to take proof of residence. It's really difficult. I mean, especially people who don't own property and that sort of thing. I think it's quite difficult. It's a lot of hoops you have to jump through to buy a SIM card in this country. And I think many people just saw it as a nuisance more than anything else. But if we look at this now and what Vodafone has disclosed here about what's going on in many markets, and they haven't, and we must emphasize, disclosed anything specific about the South African market.
Because that's illegal.
Because the RICA Act actually prohibits that. I think it's very concerning indeed, and I think what we're seeing here is mass surveillance on citizens on a global basis. And I think that everything that... I think that what Edward Snowden has revealed so far is perhaps even just the tip of the iceberg of what's actually going on.
Let's be honest. I mean, if we understand how technology works, we understand how networks work. The fact that this is likely to happen indicates that it probably is happening.
Yeah.
Simply because the way that networks are, you know, the way that computers work means for somebody to plug in is relatively straightforward if you are in the right position to be able to do so. And we shouldn't fool ourselves by thinking that people are credible in that they won't spy on other people if they don't have an intention to do so.
Indeed. As you say, Rachel, the operators have put out fairly generic statements on this issue. I'm going to actually quote Vodacom spokesman Richard Borman in total, because I think it's worth hearing specifically what he said. He said, "We're strictly bound by various regulations with respect to surveillance orders, for example, RICA and the Criminal Procedures Act, and the monitoring of communications can only take place within the framework provided by these regulations. More specifically, Vodacom would have to be served with a valid subpoena from a designated judge for any form of surveillance to take place." And I think that's the view we've been getting from the other mobile operators as well. I think that what we asked Richard specifically, or Vodacom specifically, and the other operators to comment on was whether there are any wiretaps directly into their networks right now allowing government agencies to listen to their customers' conversations or track their whereabouts, or whether those wires have existed at any point. And this is the yes or no, this is the answer to what was basically a yes or no question from Vodacom. "The law enforcement authorities are better placed to comment on the type of surveillance undertaken in South Africa. I can only reiterate that any surveillance requests to Vodacom are carried out in accordance with the law and only if Vodacom is served with a court order from a designated judge." So take from that what you will, whether that's a yes or no answer. But it's worrying indeed, and I think it's doubly worrying. Perhaps I'm running away with things a little bit here, but perhaps it's doubly worrying that the former Minister of State Security, Siyabonga Ntwele, has just recently been appointed by President Jacob Zuma as his new Minister of Telecommunications. South Africa's spy-in-chief is now in charge of setting policy and looking after the telecommunications industry. One wonders whether he will be able to resist the urge to take advantage of these provisions within the RICA Act not to start to spy on these mobile networks. So I think it's all very, very, very concerning, and kudos to Vodafone for revealing this information, but I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done in reversing some of the damage that's been done in this what I think Dominic Cole from the Internet Service Providers Association called post 9/11 legislation, meant to combat terrorism, but which I think, as the Snowden revelations have shown us, have gone far too far in favor of government surveillance and against civil liberties and privacy.
I think it's not a question anymore of if it's happening. I think we just need to look at the extent and actually the implication of it now.
Yeah.
It's a very real issue. It's a very serious issue. And if it doesn't get brought to light now and addressed now, I mean, we're going to be a lot worse in the next year or two when these things get covered up even further. Mm. And it's not the kind of thing that we want to see, obviously. Mm. The report is very interesting. I would say anybody should go just have a look at it and kind of understand what RICA in South Africa really means. It's more than what you said, SIM cards and addresses.
We really are going down the sort of 1984 Big Brother. In fact, it's probably much worse than that book ever envisaged.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
The ability to tap into all communication plugged into submarine cables to monitor activities. I mean, the only thing protecting us, I guess, is just the sheer volume of information. But we've even seen there how the NSA is using tools to drill down into information, and there's no real safeguards to. There are safeguards, but as we've seen with the NSA, they can be those boundaries are being overstepped. So it's all really interesting developments that I think we're going to see a big backlash from civil society over this, and rightfully so.
And I think this is also going to lead to, I mean, what we'll see a lot more as a result of this will be companies trying to develop software applications and browsing applications that provide true, secure communication.
We're already seeing that. I mean, Google's already announced that they're going to secure up as much as they can. Gmail already, by default, is delivered over secure. I think even their Google search is now delivered over HTTPS.
But I think, yes, those things would safeguard against most of these snoops, but there's always going to be a way into the network that government agencies could tap into. I mean, if somebody taps into where a undersea cable lands in a country, you know, the operators can't prevent that because they're not stopping it at the source.
Yeah, well, if that communication is secure, then there's less chance it's going to be intercepted by a government agency. So, yeah, I think it's something I must actually sit. I think all of us must sit down at some point is actually figure out how to secure our communication. How to create PGP keys. How to make sure that email and communication that we're having with other people is in fact secure, so that no one's eavesdropping. I think it's particularly important for journalists, because we're always talking to sources and people are providing us with information. And if government can simply tap into that at will, and know, you know, who's leaking information, it becomes very dangerous indeed. And in fact, it fundamentally undermines the precepts, the principles of democracy.
Yeah, definitely. And we're also we're looking at two things here. We're looking at real-time communication, also archived snooping. We don't know what's being archived, what of our data is being archived, whether it's at ISP level or
if you look at the NSA, it looks like just about everything is being archived.
Exactly. They're dumping it all on a hard drive somewhere so that if it is encrypted, they can try and encrypt it or break it at some later point, which is, you know, it's another problem that we're facing.
Yeah, and 10 years from now, that encryption may be breakable.
Exactly. It's difficult to see light at the end of the tunnel, but we need to address each step of this at the time that it gets brought to light.
Indeed. Anyway, let's move on from that subject and let's talk about Apple. They had their big keynote this week. Tim Cook and who was the other chap? He had a complicated surname. Was it Craig? Federighi, who actually did most of the keynote this week. From developers I've spoken to, they've come away very impressed with what Apple's announced this week. It seems that programmers are quite keen on what's been announced. I think consumers were perhaps a bit disappointed that there was no big new product like a new iPhone or a new tablet or a smartwatch or anything like that. But this was definitely this particular Worldwide Developer Conference was just that, a developer conference. Certainly the geeky community, well, let's say the programmer community as well, it seems to have welcomed it, like the new development language Swift. And some of the other announcements. You actually watched the keynote and wrote about it. What were some of the key things that came out of it?
I really thought it was a developer conference and it wasn't too many commercial type announcements, but I think this gave us a good insight into what Apple is planning over the next few years. Like you mentioned, the Swift programming language, probably the biggest announcement that they made, simply because I'm not an expert on this language, but it's certainly going to allow developers and new developers to come on board to develop easier and better applications for Apple platform. And if you're looking at supporting the ecosystem and really giving to developers the kind of tools I think that they want to develop quicker and more reliable applications, from that point of view, Apple has certainly moved in the right direction. What is interesting, though, Swift isn't just a language that was brought about because they wanted to introduce new language. This was actually in development within Apple for about 4 years now. I read an article by one of the key developer that started this, and it's a very interesting story as to how it came to be. So it might be worth looking that up. Other changes to operating systems that's been announced was a tighter integration between devices. And this is one thing that I thought Apple really did a really good move into doing, simply because it allows, as a user of Apple products, you are now able to cross-communicate with your devices, whether it's sharing data between your devices, whether it's picking up a phone call on your MacBook if your phone is in the room and it's ringing. And I think this is where Apple is showing the industry that their platform is still probably one of the strongest. We do have Android. That's a great platform. I love it. It's a lot of customizable options for power users.
Yeah.
But if we look at end users, when they buy an iPad, when they buy a MacBook and the iPhone, the experience that they're going to get with their devices is probably going to trump any experience that you would have with any three other devices, whether it's Android, Android tablet, Android phone, and a Windows machine. They also announced that their new iDrive, which is going to be a big improvement on their previous iCloud offerings, which we know was subpar and really didn't live up to the expectations of what a decent cloud service offering should be able to offer. With Cloud iDrive, the experience is going to be more akin to a Dropbox type environment, and again, it'll be available across all your devices.
It's almost become an extension of the operating system, hasn't it? I mean,
yes.
Microsoft with OneDrive, used to be SkyDrive, this product now. One wonders if Dropbox is simply going to be acquired by someone at some point.
Possible.
By one of the platform vendors.
It is possible. I think the appeal in Dropbox though is the fact that they are independent, and if the executives and founding members, if they stick to their guns and say they want to remain independent, which they probably will be, which I think they will do.
Yeah.
It's unlikely, but it doesn't stop any company from doing their own really good cloud-based storage and backup.
I mean, Apple's and Microsoft's cloud solutions are cross-platform anyway. But I suppose the argument is they're baked into the operating system too. So, you know, if you're using Microsoft Office 365 it's seamlessly integrated with OneDrive. Presumably, Apple's going to do the same with its cloud drive offering.
Yes.
And I suppose the as you say, the differentiator for Dropbox is that it's cross-platform and it can integrate. It will integrate across all platforms seamlessly.
And one of the other things that Apple did announce too was that applications like Dropbox would have better input into the operating system now. So where before from my iPhone, I wasn't able to save my data directly in the operating system to a Dropbox account, those APIs have now been opened up so that Dropbox, a company like Dropbox, can have their save to Dropbox feature built into the operating system as a widget within the app. Overall, I think WWDC this year was probably the most exciting that I've seen, simply because I think Apple has now understood that they can't remain as close as what they were or closed off from the rest of the world as what they've traditionally been. And I think we're going to see some good things going forward. Let's also not forget that they did talk about their new smart home features.
Very briefly, though.
Yes. But I think that was just opening it up to developers, maybe hinting at the future of where they want to take that platform. Again, you know, I think it's very exciting if they are going to not keep it a closed system, which it doesn't seem like they are. They're likely going to open up the system, which allows any third-party manufacturers to develop licensed hardware for smart home automation.
Mm.
And if I can control that from an iPhone or from my Siri, which they say that you'll be able to do, I can see a bright future for smart home. It's already got a good install base, a good user base.
We're just a couple of weeks now, if I'm not mistaken, away from the big Google I/O conference, which is Google's equivalent of WWDC.
Yeah.
And as you know, Rehad, it was either earlier this year or late last year that they announced the acquisition of Nest, which is also all about home automation. So I expect that at Google I/O this year, we're going to see a big move from Google on the home automation front.
Definitely.
So it'll be interesting to see what angle Google takes on home automation versus once we get more detail from Apple on what their plans are.
And I do also think, in closing, that what we'll see on the back of this, we've been speaking about wearable technology quite a lot over the last year in anticipation for WWDC. Everybody thought that they would be releasing a smart device, a wearable device of some kind.
Mm.
But if you look at what the smart home actually does and what it means, we'll see wearables off the back of it. So wearables won't be driving the smart home. The smart home will likely be driving wearables.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that is an interesting take on it.
That's likely where they're going. So we'll see. Google I/O is also coming up. I think they're probably going to have a very interesting...
Anything else that stood out for you in the Apple keynote?
I mentioned earlier the connectivity features between your devices, to me, was probably the most important.
That was very cool. I really like the ability to answer your phone, your iPhone on your Mac.
Yes. So your any device is essentially going to become a speakerphone for your iPhone.
Mm.
You'll be able to make calls, dial calls.
They only work with iPhone, though. If you happen to have a Windows or an Android phone, would it work with a Mac?
Not as far as I know. They didn't say that there will be a Windows software. I mean, it's probably possible, but they'll probably keep it tight to the system. It's all about
keeping that walled garden tight and controlled. Interesting. I think, that's a great feature, but I'm sure the other vendors are going to copy it pretty quickly.
Yeah. No, look, it's a great feature. Android's probably in a better position to bring this to a cross-platform scenario and give tight, stiff competition to Apple users who like that feature.
I must say, I also like the improvements to the visual improvements to the next version of Mac OS X, Yosemite.
Yes,
I really like the transparent menu options and also the cleaned up font, which I think works better on Retina displays. It really does look really good.
Yeah, I think they're moving away from their rounded, shaded app icon look and feel. The flat design is certainly the way to go. The new typeface is making readability on the screen much better. And like you said, with Retina, you need that. You can't stay with an old interface.
Yeah. Great. The last thing I want to chat about this week in our news segment is actually not really a news story, but it comes on the back of all the sort of stories we've have been covering over the last few weeks around internet radio. For example, the launch by Gareth Cliff of cliffcentral.com. We've seen last year the launch by Darren Smith of his Balls Radio offering. So there's a growing internet radio interest in internet radio in South Africa, and I've been quite keen for some time to find a way of listening to internet radio and streaming music in my car. When I'm at home, I listen to streaming music through Google Music all the time. In fact, never listen to CDs at all anymore. I have a $8 a month subscription to Google Music. I signed up through a VPN, and it works beautifully. I wanted to do the same thing in my car because I don't have all of my music on my iPod anymore. It's a pain to manage the iPod, especially if you have a PC, not a Mac, to do that. And so I wanted to get streaming in my car. So I've been doing a bit of investigation. I had a spare one of those Wi-Fi 3G dongles, MiFi type dongle, lying around, and I figured that would be a good way to create a personal hotspot in my car. So I had a look around at data plans, and I saw that Telkom Mobile had the best options. In fact, they've got a brilliant option at the moment. We wrote about it some months ago. I'd actually forgotten about it, where you buy a SIM card for 49 Rand and you get 200 megs of data a month for a year.
Yeah,
49 Rand once off, not per month. It's incredible. Incredible deal. So I bought one of those SIM cards and been using it in the car to listen to music, and it works absolutely brilliantly. I've been driving around. This morning I had a long drive. I went down to the south of Joburg to I think it's called Mulbarton, and I lost connectivity just past Soweto on the highway. But other than that, driving around the northern suburbs of Johannesburg, going to meetings in Rosebank and Sandton, it's been working absolutely brilliantly on the Telkom 3G network. It's not even their 4G network. The dongle I had lying around was a 3G only dongle. And it's been brilliant. I've been listening to music, streaming music on Google Music, and I've been I must say I haven't listened to Gareth Cliff yet, mainly because he's not in what's the app? TuneIn
Radio,
which I use on my phone. So what I've done is effectively my car stereo system's got Bluetooth built into it, so I switched Bluetooth on my phone, pair my phone with the car, create a wireless hotspot, so I'm no longer streaming over expensive Vodacom data, but I'm using the Telkom Mobile data hotspot in my car, and listening to Google Music and to TuneIn Radio, and I'm a big fan of progressive rock, and it's impossible to find that on local radio in South Africa, and there's some great radio stations that play exactly that sort of music on TuneIn, so I've favorited them in TuneIn, and I've been listening to them on the go, and it's brilliant. It's changing my media consumption in the car completely.
Yeah.
I mean, I still listen to some local radio stations. I'm a big fan of Talk Radio 702. I think they're fantastic station, and they're great for keeping up on current affairs, and very often I'll tune in at the top of the hour for a news bulletin or whatever, but then I'll go back to listening to my music. It's really, really good, and I think a lot of consumers are going to start to do this as data prices come down, and you know, all I've done is I've taken I've got a little adapter in my car that actually does my GPS mileage. Into that I plug it's got a little USB port into which I plug the 3G modem, which I then just hide away, so it's sitting in the car. It's always charged because it's always plugged in, and so as soon as I get into the car, switch the car on, the modem switches itself on, so it establishes the hotspot with my phone, and I'm ready to go. In fact, I can pick up the music I was listening to last time I was in the car.
Oh, that's very cool.
So it's not a lot of PT. You're not staring at your phone while you're trying to drive and risking life and limb.
Exactly.
You can literally press a button and you're listening to music the moment you pull out of your garage.
Yeah, these on-demand music systems and the radio that you can pick up any station around the world is like you said, really changing the way we consume media. And I also enjoy doing that. But what I do is the program that I use, Symphy, at the moment, allows for offline streaming. So I just find the playlists that I like, or I create my own, because I have a running list of favorite songs that I just add to when I hear something. Save them as offline, and I never have an issue with picking up the data, because, you know, it saves it on my device. It just has to authenticate it when I start the app. But that, to me, is almost more valuable than streaming the whole time, because you have it there. If you do have a dead spot, first you don't use data, you don't use data all the time, but you won't drop a song if it's going through a dead spot.
Yeah. No, it works well. In fact, on Google Music, the more you listen to Google Music, it learns about your musical tastes.
Oh, yes.
And there's a button there, and you fire up Google Music on the homepage. You hit it. It says, "I'm feeling lucky radio."
That is cool.
It creates your own playlist based on what you like to listen to. So very often it pops up tunes that you really haven't heard before that you really find you actually enjoy.
You don't have to stream it through a VPN. You signed up.
Once you sign up. I think they put the minimum level of effort into making it difficult for you to sign up. It's really easy. You can even use a South African credit card. Nice. I bank with FNB, and I had no problem accepting my credit card, and they have no problem deducting the $8 a month for the service. Once I'd signed up through a VPN service, I didn't need that VPN again. I listen on my PC, I listen on my TV, I listen on my phone, and there's no issues at all.
Do you think you'll change to Spotify when it eventually launches there?
I don't think so. I don't think there's any reason to. I've already got everything I need through
Google Music.
Through Google Music, unless there's something radically different about their catalog where they've got a whole lot of really obscure prog rock that isn't already available on Google Music, then I might consider it. But no, I don't think so. I've also got locked into. I actually signed up for Google Music when it originally launched in America at the original discount rate of, I think it was $7.99 a month. The price has since gone up to, I think, to $10. So I'm locked in at the earlier price for life. So I'll stick with it.
Brilliant.
Right, well, that takes care of the news and the not so much news this week. Time to do our winner and loser of the week. We don't actually have a loser this week. We scratched our heads long and hard to try and come up with one, but weren't successful, so no loser this week. Lots of people out there breathing easy. Our winner this week is, I think, Vodafone for their disclosures around government spying, and well done to them for that disclosure. The report is available on our website under one of the stories. If you want to go and read it, it's available there as a PDF. Cool. Apple product pick of the week time. I'm just going to do mine quickly because we've talked about it already. I want to talk about TuneIn. It's just the most amazing application. It's one of the few apps I've been using for at least 5 years. Just fantastic for listening to music stations and or stations generally from around the world, picking up podcasts, etc. And I'm using it more and more to listen to great music and great talk shows. It's been revamped recently across all platforms, and it's looking really good. So if you don't know TuneIn, I'm sure most of our listeners do know TuneIn, but if you don't, go check it out in your app store. It's really, really well worth checking out. Rachel, what have you got for us this week?
An application that I've been playing with over the last year or two is an app called Read Quick. Now, there are a couple of these on the app store.
And read quick.
Yeah. And what it does is it takes an article or a story or any Word document that you have, and it breaks it. Once you've put it into the application, whether it's a link or actually importing the document, it basically plays back at the speed of your choosing the article per word. Now, the concept is that you read a lot quicker doing so, although there's also findings that said that you don't get as much context in the article when you read like that. But essentially what it does is when I press play, I'll be able to read at 250 or 300 words or 400 words per hour. It'll run through the article and let me read things quickly. It's very interesting to read long articles like this. I find it quite useful. I do pick up a lot of the context when it runs through, and I've really been enjoying it. I don't use it every day, but it's one of those things that when I find myself facing a long article, I'll fire this up. If I can just get to start.
So what is it actually? Ah, I see.
So I'm just showing on screen.
So it will be 250 words a minute.
Yeah, 250 words. Mine's up to 350 words a minute. I can get it if I'm in the right headspace. And you can scrub it to go quicker and slower. It's on a white background, so you just have the words flashing at you. And if you're in a nice environment, it allows you to get through articles a lot quicker.
That's fascinating. This is where I wish this podcast was also a video, because it's quite amazing to see this on screen. It really makes you actually concentrate on what you're reading.
And if you follow a few sentences, obviously you're probably trying to read the middle of the article now. It works really well.
That's amazing. It's amazing. What allows you to concentrate, because when you're reading a piece of paper or reading a longer story on your phone, your eyes tend to wander and other things. You lose concentration. I find if I'm looking at your screen now, I'm really concentrating on what that is saying.
Yeah, it works well. Worth checking out if you're a reader and you like to maybe improve your reading speed. This does have some positive benefits to that. I found that my reading on normal paper also becomes slightly more efficient.
Yeah.
But I think if you do this all the time, you'll certainly see a big difference.
Wow, very cool. So that's called Quick Read. It's available for which platforms, did you say?
This is available on iOS at the moment. But like I said, there is a lot of these applications around for any of the platforms.
Okay.
Just find a speed reading application. That should help.
All right, excellent. Richard, I think that's it for our episode 100 of Talk Central. Until next week, have a great weekend, everyone, and keep warm. From Richard and myself, until next time, take care. Ciao.
Ciao.